I only do that to stress you guys out. It's okay. Don't do that. They're reaching for the buttons to turn it down and all that other stuff up there. Scare people. Cool. Yeah, yesterday was huge. Wedding, right? That was great. Last Friday was a very significant day. It's huge. Friday was the 30th anniversary of what? You guys are going to hate yourselves for this. Star Wars! 30th anniversary, May 25th, 1977. Right on. Hard to imagine. Imagine 30 years have blown by since that came out. Star Wars. It changed how movies were made. Remember this? They used computers, right? No, you couldn't see the little strings on the spaceships going around anymore, hanging from the top. It changed marketing. Think about all those little toys that came out because of Star Wars, right? Those little cuddly Ewok thing. As soon as they came out with Star Wars 3, everybody knew they were going to come out with the little dolls, right, and make a fortune off of those things. Do you know what today the price of an unopened Jawa figure with a genuine vinyl cape, do you know how much that goes for today? Think about this. $3,550. Start checking the toy closet, all right, and see if you got one of those. How many of you can remember where you were when Star Wars came out? First time when you saw the movie. You remember this? Where were you at? In a theater. Yes, of course. Yeah. Very good. There. Where were you at? On your honeymoon for the seventh time. You went on your honeymoon and you saw the movie seven times. No. And then you saw it for the seventh time. Okay, because I think, you know, your honeymoon, seven times, Star Wars. Those are diehard Star Wars fans, right? Oh, man. I saw it in Hot Springs, Arkansas for the first time. Think about that. Yeah, weird. There are events that we remember, right? As we're moving through life, going from where we were to where we're going, there are moments in time that we remember that have significance for us, right? And many of those moments, they are transition points in our lives where we've made decisions, where events have taken place, where things have changed, the future direction of our life is changed, our approach to life has changed, points of transition in which our lives are no longer the same. Sakura Terakawa, age 63. Describes her four decades of marital life as a gradual transition from wife to mother to servant. Communication with her husband started off with love letters and evolved over time into mostly demands for his evening meals and nitpicking over the quality of her housework. And when he came home 3 years ago and announced he was ready to retire, Terakawa despaired. Okay, that's a transition, isn't it? The husband retires. Major change moment in life. Terakawa said this, quote, "It was bad enough that I had to wait on him when he came home from work, but having him around the house all the time was more than I could possibly bear." Several months after her husband retired, Terakawa developed stomach ulcers. Her speech began to slur. Rashes broke out under her eyes. And when doctors discovered polyps in her throat, but they could find no medical reason for her ailments, she was referred to a psychiatrist who diagnosed her with stress-related RHS. Retired husband syndrome, okay? See, right now there's a number of ladies here that are just saying to themselves, I knew it! So this is real. In 1991, the Japanese Society of Psychosomatic Medicine identified retired husband syndrome as a legitimate condition. Think about that. As we have been moving through the book of Joshua, we've been seeing in the account of Joshua that it's about real people who are facing enormous challenges and learning to trust God along the way. And coming to chapter 3, Joshua chapter 3, starting at verse 1, coming to chapter 3, where we're coming to here is a major transition moment in the life of God's people, a transition point that's going to challenge their faith in God. Joshua 3, verse 1, starting at verse 1. Then Joshua rose early in the morning, and he and all the sons of Israel set out from Shittim and came to the Jordan, and they lodged there before they crossed. Now let's pause there and make sure we're up to speed on what's happening. Over the last two Sundays, looking at Joshua, we've seen that God requires His people to trust Him, to have faith in Him. And God has given directions to Joshua. Not all the details, but enough for Joshua to know what the next step is. Cross the Jordan River and conquer the land that I'm giving you. And with that command, God has promised to be with Joshua and his people. And God has provided His word to His people so His people will know how to live, how to be obedient, how to be His people as He moves them forward to take the land that He's given them. And in chapter 2, we met the two spies, and we met Rahab, the two spies who were spying out Jericho, who came back with this favorable report. The Lord has given us the land, and the people are really, really scared of us. Remember this? Great words of encouragement. Faith-building words on the eve of moving forward. And all that's contained in this word, then. Then, after all these things, Joshua gets up in the morning, and he and the whole nation go down to the Jordan River and camp out there. And if you look at the map, you'll see that they've moved from Shittim, where they were camped. They've packed up. They've taken about a 10-mile journey, and they're now camped by the banks of the Jordan River. See the little tent there? That's a tent, by the way. Okay, I worked on that. There's a tent there, right? So now they're camped by the banks of the Jordan River, and they're waiting the next set of instructions. Verse 2. At the end of 3 days, okay, now don't miss the importance of that pause there. 3 days. Okay. Remember that this is spring. The Jordan River, which is normally a small stream, during the spring, it collects rainwater and snow melt off of Mount Hermon up in the far north. And this little spring becomes this mile-wide torrent. Okay, think of Bear Creek on steroids. Right? And so God's people, who have spent 40 years in the desert, which is a pretty dry place, this group of probably non-swimmers camps next to this raging torrent of death for 3 days. For 3 days, they can feel the moisture and they can hear the sound of that river. They have yet to be told how they're going to cross that river, just as they're going to cross it. Behind them is what is familiar. Before them is the promised land. And between them is this raging torrent of death. There are no boats, there's no bridges, there's no convenient fords, especially for 2 million people. And at some point they may have wondered, during that pause, what is going on here? Verse 2. After the end of 3 days, after people had 3 days to contemplate the river, the officers went through the midst of the camp, and they commanded the people, saying, "When you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God, with the Levitical priests carrying it, then you shall set out from your place and go after it. However, there shall be between you and it a distance of about 2,000 cubits, which is about 3,000 feet by measure. Do not come near it, that you may know the way by which you shall go, for you have not passed this way before." There's two instructions here. The first is, follow the ark. Say that with me. Follow the ark. What are they to follow? The ark. Okay, wherever the ark goes, you go. When the people were in the wilderness, when they left Egypt, after they left Egypt, God used what? He used a pillar of fire and a cloud. Fire at night, cloud during the daytime. Where the pillar went, where the cloud went, same with the cloud. The pillar and the cloud, they represent the presence of God. They followed these through the wilderness. The Ark of the Covenant here, the Ark contains the law of God. It contains the manna. Remember the manna coming down, God taking care of His people. Within the ark is the reminder of God's holiness, His expectations of His people, His provision for their lives. Over the ark was the mercy seat, the place where the sin of the people and God's pardon met. Entering the promised land, there's no pillar. There's no cloud, but there's the Ark of the Covenant, symbolic of God's presence and His relationship with His people. Point, following the ark means following God. Our God goes before us. Where the ark goes, follow the ark. We go with the ark. Second instruction is this. Stay back. Say that with me. Stay back. 3,000 feet. That's a little over, what, about half a mile? A little over that. Probably two reasons for this. One of them is reverence. Reverence. The ark represents the holy, almighty, sovereign God of the universe. The God who defeated Egypt, led Moses, leads Joshua. Respect the ark, respect God. The second reason for this probably is logistics. I was in the bank the other day, and I was waiting in line. You know those lines? They're always longer when you're in a hurry, right? So I'm in this line, and I'm waiting, and this adult cuts in front of me. No apologies, no excuse me, just cuts in front of me. Didn't even think there was anything wrong. You ever have somebody do that to you? Okay, close to 2 million people are going to follow this ark. To follow the ark means staying behind it. Stay in line. Keep your place in the procession. If enough people start cutting in front of this ark, pretty soon no one's going to know where the ark is. To get ahead of God while we're trusting Him by faith, to get a hold of God, ahead of God, that's not good. Do you ever do that? God, lead me. I need your guidance. And then when He does, it's like, okay, I can see where you're going. I've got it from here. The commanders remind the people, you haven't been this way before. Entering the promised land, that's a new experience. Stay with your travel buddies. Okay, follow the ark. When moving by faith, we need to follow God. Okay, notice also, Joshua still hasn't told these people how they're getting across the river. Verse 5. Then Joshua said to the people, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. Joshua spoke to the priests, saying, take up the Ark of the Covenant and cross over ahead of the people. So they took up the Ark of the Covenant and went ahead of the people. There's still no clue as to how they're going to get across that river, but notice two things here. First is this command given to the people to what? Consecrate yourselves. Consecration is not taking a shower with our raincoat on. Okay, getting clean only on the outside. Consecration is turning our hearts over to God in faith and in trust of His promise. Putting away anything that's not of God. Giving ourselves unreservedly to God to be used in His work. Yielding ourselves to Him as willing instruments in His hands. God is about to do wonders. Miraculous displays of His omnipotence, demonstrations of His faithfulness and relationship with His people. He's going to fulfill the promises that He made to Abraham over 600 years ago. Grab this. This is a holy war waged by the holy God. And His people are the instruments in that war. To follow the ark, to be His holy people, means consecration. Nothing of ourselves held back from God. That's putting ourselves where God chooses to work in us and through us so that we get blessed and God is glorified. An example of that consecration in action is what comes second. Notice, secondly, the obedience of the priests. The obedience of the priests. Did you notice what wasn't in God, in Joshua's command? And see, he still hasn't told them how they're going to get across the river. Joshua says, move, and they move. That's faith in action. Lives with nothing held back from God. Verse 7. Now the Lord said to Joshua, this day I will begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel, that they may know that just as I have been with Moses, I will be with you. You shall, moreover, command the priests who are carrying the Ark of the Covenant, saying, when you come to the edge of the waters of the Jordan, you shall stand still in the Jordan. Okay, the similarities are intentional. Orchestrated by God. Remember the Red Sea. God commands His people to camp on a piece of land that backs up against the Red Sea. He gives them no conceivable means of retreat. Strategically, it's a big oops, a big boo-boo. And Pharaoh comes with all his chariots, and God's people start whining. Is it because there wasn't enough room to bury people in Egypt that you brought us here to get slaughtered? And Moses' position as God's man before God's people is questioned. Right? And then God commands Moses to lift up his staff. God sends a wind that sweeps the sea back. The people cross on dry land. Pharaoh and his chariots to do the dead man's float. God confirms that Moses is his man. God exalts Moses in the eyes of the people. Are we together on that? On the banks of the Jordan, same deal. The people, 2 million strong, are on the march now towards the Jordan River. Follow the ark into the river. God's promise to Joshua, what I did to Moses, I'm going to do for you. Verse 9. Then Moses said to the sons of Israel, come here and hear the words of the Lord your God. Joshua said, by this you shall know that the living God is among you, and that he will assuredly dispossess from before you the Canaanite, the Hittite, the Hivite, the Perizzite, the Girgashite, the Amorite, and the Jebusite. There are 7 nations there that are to be destroyed. Why? 3 reasons. First, they've been warned. They were warned. All these nations are descendants of Ham, which means that they were kosher, right? No, don't go with that. They all descended from Ham, which means they were descendants of Noah. So this flood was a big-time warning to them that they should have been remembering, the big-time warning of what God does against those who live in sin against Him. And then the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, which were just to the south, they were wiped out by God because of sin. These people should have paid attention to that. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 6 says, He, God, condemned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah to destruction by reducing them to ashes, having made them an example to those who would live ungodly lives. They've been warned. Second, their sinfulness had reached the limit of what God would allow. God has His timing. And there are limits that He sets. And according to His justice, He brings about punishment. And third, their destruction at the hand of Israel was to be a warning to Israel. God could have wiped out all these people with some kind of plague or pestilence, had them swallowed up by a massive earthquake. But He chooses to use His people as His instrument of punishment. Gave them a visual, tactile demonstration of His judgment and sin. His people should know this. Those sins don't go there. Look what happened to the Canaanites. Live consecrated. And the point of this, Joshua says, is here. So that you will know that the living God is among you. Not some God that you go out and you chop down a tree and you use half the tree to build a fire and warm yourself on it. And then you take the other half of that tree and you carve out some sort of idol, put gold on it, and you bow down and worship it. But the true and only living God. So that's godly leadership. Joshua could have said, well, today God is going to exalt me. But the goal of godly leadership is to point people to God. So bottom line, this isn't about Joshua. It isn't about Israel. It's about God and what God is doing. And we are to be consecrated instruments in the hands of the living God. Verse 11. Behold, the ark of the covenant of the Lord of all the earth is crossing over ahead of you into the Jordan. Now then, take for yourselves 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one man for each tribe. Something we're going to look at next chapter. It shall come about when the soles of the feet of the priests who carry the ark of the Lord of all the earth, rests in the waters of the Jordan, the waters which are flowing down from above will stand in one heap. Now put yourselves in the place of the priests. For 3 days, they've been feeling and hearing that river and wondering what the plan is. And now Joshua calmly commands them to walk into the river. That's the plan? Just walk into the river? Maybe that 3,000 feet is so the people have enough time to stop while we're getting swept downstream. See, we need to hang on to this. To cross that river is impossible. If the river doesn't stop, if it doesn't dry up, the Canaanites, who've heard about the Red Sea parting and what happened to the Egyptians, they're going to breathe one huge sigh of relief, and they are going to go on sinning and laughing at God. Well, the priests, if the river doesn't dry up, the priests are toast, soggy toast. Right? God's people are going to cease being God's people. The whole promised land thing is history. And Joshua's going to look like a dweeb. Right? Forget being the leader of Israel. But bottom line, this is about the living God and being consecrated to Him, trusting Him with our lives, faith. Get the ark and go down to the river. And they did. Verse 14. So when the people set out from their tents to cross the Jordan, with the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant before the people, and when those who carried the Ark came to the Jordan, the feet of the priests carrying the Ark were dipped into the edge of the water. So in case you didn't get this, for the Jordan overflows all its banks all the days of the harvest. Okay, it's a raging torrent. The waters which were flowing down from above stood and rose up in one heap, a great distance away at Adam, the city that is beside Zarethan. And those which were flowing down toward the Sea of the Arabah, the Salt Sea or the Dead Sea, were completely cut off. So the people crossed opposite Jericho, and the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the middle of the Jordan, while all Israel crossed on dry ground until all the nation had finished crossing the Jordan. Close to 2 million people crossed the river. 600,000 of them are men ready for war. And the people passed at least a half mile, 3,000 feet, on either side of the priests. And the river is dried up for miles. That's hard to get our minds around. Notice two things. First, timing. There's a point about 15 miles north of Jericho. Let's get a map up there. About 15 miles north of Jericho where the Jordan River flows through these clay banks about 40 feet high. So we really don't know where Adam is, but we think it's probably about there or so. Okay? About 15 miles north of Jericho, the river flows through these clay banks. They're about 40 feet high. In 1927, there was an earthquake that caused these banks to collapse, and they so dammed up the river that no water flowed down the river past them for 21 hours. So what Scripture describes is something like this. The water upstream is cut off, and so the water below the cutoff point flows downstream into the Dead Sea, leaving a riverbed, a place for God's people to cross. God may have done things that way. Joshua tells the priest, when your feet are in the water, God will turn off the river. However and whenever God did what he did, it's amazing that he timed it so that the cause upstream had the desired effect at the right time downstream. Now, 1 minute, that river is this raging torrent, and the next, it's a dry riverbed. And when the priests stepped into the water just dried up. There's a lesson to be learned here. God doesn't ask the priests to wade into the deep end of the raging river. You know, when we step forward in faith, God isn't trying to wipe us out or ask the impossible of us. Just step into the shallows. Just step forward and trust Him. And He'll take care of the river in His time at just the right time. Second, notice the ground. The ground. The Hebrew word for dry ground is harabah. And that doesn't mean like a powdery dry, like absolutely devoid of any moisture. Sometimes happens around here, you know, it's just dusty ground. It does mean that the ground was no longer covered with water. It was sufficiently dry for the people to cross, no more, no less. You know, in my younger days, we used to play football in a wet field. Every down was in the same place. So that after a few downs, we were playing in mud, right? And that was awesome. Getting pounded into the mud, sliding around, drenched in muddy water. Tide gets out the dirt kids get into. Remember that? You ever walked on wet ground after maybe 20 people have walked by? Or after maybe 500,000 have walked by? Maybe a million people have walked through this muddy ground? The ground gets pretty chewed up. People are slipping and sliding. Carts are getting stuck. The whole procession gets bogged down. There's none of that here. When God calls us to step forward in faith, He makes the way possible. Provides exactly what is needed for us to move forward trusting Him. Transition. The wilderness wanderers, the nomads, move to take possession of their land. The nation of slaves becomes the nation of warriors. A people that once came to the Jordan and turned back now moves forward to go where no one has gone before. Follow the ark, cross the river. Say that with me. Follow the ark, cross the river. Think with me about our transition as a congregation. Like Israel wandering in the wilderness, God has been at work in us and through us, teaching us to trust Him, providing for our needs, teaching us to work together. Together, we've reached a time of transition. For years, we have been tenants in someone else's building. And now God has given us a building of our own. God is taking us where we've never been before. And ahead of us is the promised land, the greater Merced Metroplex. That's an interesting comparison. Broken homes, gangs, drugs, violence. Hurting, wounded, struggling people. People with questions and no answers. People that are indifferent to God. People who need, desperately need Jesus. And this building is like the river. It's formidable and it's tempting to focus on it. It's easy to get bogged down on this building and to miss the promised land. God calls us to follow Him through the river to the land beyond. It would be easy to think of this building as a field of dreams. If you build it, they will come. If we build it, God will fill it. But we need to step forward. That's a point of transition. Will we allow God to take us where we've never been before? Building a building is easy. Becoming God's people, making a spiritual impact on this community, that takes everything that we are. To follow the ark means consecration. Consecrating ourselves so that our hearts are turned towards God, focused in faith and trust in His promises and direction, giving ourselves unreservedly to God to be used in His work, yielding ourselves to Him as willing instruments in His hands, putting aside anything that's not of God, the things that keep us away from here on Sundays, the things that chew up our time so that we have very little left over for God, what we devote our finances to that serve us and not God, what we allow our minds to be captivated by. To cross the river means stepping into the water. We have to go outward. Not just the staff or a few of us, but all of us. We need to be the ones that are passing out the tracts and the flyers and entering into conversations and engaging people and sharing our lives with others, inviting them to Jesus. To cross the river means that we need to do church like we've never done church before. Not long ago, someone suggested to me that we should offer a tutoring program after school for kids that need help. Maybe over at the Creekside Apartments, over at Swiss Colony. That's crossing the river. You know, if you let your mind think about it, there are a tremendous number of possibilities for engaging people where they have needs. When we have outreach events, concerts, luncheons, drama, sports, it should be the desire of every single person within this congregation who calls this congregation home to come and to invite and to participate. And there are so many opportunities around here to serve with children and youth and adults, behind the scenes and up front. And doing that may be terrifying. It is so much easier to sit here in comfy teal-colored chairs and expect other people to show up. But that's not what church is about. We are on the brink of the miraculous. And God has called us to follow Him across the river. One more thought. Our transition is God's people. God brings nations to transition events. He brings congregations He brings us as individuals to moments of transition where we face raging torrents in our lives, marriages that struggle, families that struggle, financial issues, stuff at work, calls to greater stewardship, greater service, to opportunities in ministry. You hear the river, you can feel the moisture. And yet God calls us to move forward, to follow Him and to move forward where we have never been before. The miraculous is before you. Will you trust Him? Say this with me. Follow the ark. Let's say it together. Follow the ark, cross the river. Let's bow together in prayer. Father, there are times when you lead us where we do not want to go. But we must. And we need to consecrate ourselves. To let go of anything that keeps us from following you and crossing the river to where you have laid out the miraculous. What you desire to accomplish in us and through us, that we might be blessed and that you might be glorified. Church, this morning, you know where that river is. You've been listening to it and you can feel it. You can see what's comfortable behind you. You can see the miraculous. You're longing for the possibilities. But you got the river. And this morning, God is saying to each one of us, let go of absolutely everything that keeps you from trusting me and follow me across that river. This morning, you may say to God, God, here it is. I see the river. And this is keeping me back. Maybe you don't know. Say, God, show it to me. Where do I need to be consecrated before you? God, I want to follow you, but I'm struggling. Take me forward. Father, as a congregation and as individuals, help us to follow you. Take us across the river. We ask in Jesus' name. Amen.